I'll be in Edinburgh on August 11th at the Edinburgh Festival. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. And would you look at that? It's Tuesday again. It's 6 p.m., time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
It was just barely evening, actually. It's 3 minutes into evening. I think it begins at 6 p.m., right? That's when evening starts, afternoon ends.
Well, some might find that a subjective point.
Well, I think we should get the facts on this, just so we aren't spreading misinformation, because we are loath to spread misinformation.
Yeah, well, we'll check that after the show, because there's a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about. It's been a crazy week for us. Actually, you know, it's funny, earlier today you said it's been a long week, and I remind you that it's Tuesday. But you're right. It has been a long week. For most people, that would be enough.
I stand by my statement.
Yeah. We're organizing a conference taking place not this weekend, but the one after that.
I wasn't even joking either.
No.
I was like, yes. I was very serious.
Yeah.
I was done with this week already.
I'm done with next week. I really am. But we're going to get through it. We're going to get through it because that's what we do. We buckle down. And for reasons unknown, we plod ahead and continue doing the same thing over and over again. Oh, we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. America, we're watching you and keeping our fingers crossed.
I just want to remind everyone it's the 21st century. We're actually a quarter of the way through the 21st century. Just in case there was confusion about that.
I thought you were going bigger than that. I thought you were going to say we're a quarter of the way through whatever 100 centuries is.
That too.
What is
millennia?
No, it can't be because we just had a millennia.
Oh.
2000, right? Well, that was a new millennia. That's
I made one
of those every 1,000 years, but this is 100,000 years. What's that called?
Centilia? I don't know.
Yeah, Alexa, do you know that one? I didn't think so.
They're not talking to us. The computers they're sort of against us.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the key words is computer. Whether you say, God forbid you're watching Star Trek and you have the personal assistant that whose wake word is computer, every 5 minutes it's trying to chime in. We should just change the wake word if we can figure that out. Yeah, and something that this just started. You know, I used to be able to say play WUSB. Of course, it would play all different manner of call letters that sound like USB but aren't, but eventually it would play WUSB. Then you tell it to stop, and then 5 minutes later you tell it play again because you had to turn it off for a few minutes for some reason. But now it doesn't remember. It says, what do you want me to play? Before it would just say, oh, play the last thing I was playing, especially if it was recently. And now somebody reprogrammed something, so you have to say it every single time. It's going to mishear you every single time. These little things get so annoying, you know. People put little upgrades or, you know, new software additions, and it doesn't do what you want anymore. You know, if you have a Roku, you know what I mean. They just keep changing things so that when you have it set just right, somebody says, nah, I'm gonna make it different for everybody.
Yeah, it makes it really hard to rely on stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure does. Well, okay, but let's start with some good news. The U.S. stock market rallied to records today as profits keep piling up for companies and as oil prices eased. I mean, isn't it amazing how, you know, Trump can say, oh, yeah, we're going to be talking to Iran about something. And everyone says, oh, okay, well, then my fears are addressed. Everything is fine. Let's drop the price of oil. Let's trade more. And the economy is great. You know, and then the next day, Iran says, we don't know what you're talking about. We're not talking to the United States. And we're going to keep closing the Strait of Hormuz and causing all kinds of problems. And then everybody freaks out again and says, oh, my God, let's add another dollar to the oil price. And the economy is in the can, which is the best I could say. I don't understand these people who make decisions based on what they hear Trump say, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. He lies half the time. No, a lot more than that.
Yeah, but it's market manipulation, too.
Well, it seems very open to being manipulated, doesn't it? I mean, if all you have to do is say, oh, yeah, we've got a peace plan, don't have any details for you, but it's coming, and that's enough to make the prices drop?
Well, it's always been that way, but the conventions and the sort of norms around the presidency would have some of this commentary by the president be a little bit more strategic, but this is totally anathema to any sort of norm that we would have expected. So that's alarming, but mm-hmm. that's also the way they're carrying out the business of the presidency is, and it's so bad and distrust is to the point where a lot of people feel like it's just all a giant conspiracy and benefiting everyone except us. Like, we bear the brunt of it. And that may be true on certain levels.
I'm beginning to think that, yes. The S&P 500, I have to admit, I don't know what the hell that is. I don't really care.
It's the Standard & Poor's Index.
Thank you, Kyle. I don't know what that is. I don't know who those people are. I don't know why I should care. Why am I talking about this? But you know what? I'm going to plot on like I do. The S&P 500 shot up 1.5%. I assume that was in one day. And the main measure of Wall Street's health, because that is the most important health care you can imagine, it topped its prior all-time high, and that was set a couple of months ago. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 907 points, or 1.7%. Wow, that's almost exactly what the S&P 500 went up by. And that's its own record set the day before, while the NASDAQ Composites jumped 2.6%, so they win in the jumping battle. Now, despite worries about high inflation, the war in Iran, frustration with the economy, it's going to a second page, a possible bubble in stock prices because of the boom in artificial intelligence technology. Wait, are you worried about a bubble or a boom? I'd be worried about a boom. Bubbles don't scare me, but booms do.
It's a feedback bubble that's about to burst.
That's how I feel every day.
Yeah, it's sort of both. It's a boom in financing to the extent and degree that it has become what some are viewing as a bubble, if that makes sense.
Read the stock market report every day because it's just so much fun. Anyway, I'm sorry, I got lost in that sentence. So despite all those worries, and boy, there are a lot of worries and probably a lot more than what we just listed, Wall Street has hit its latest apex and rewarded investors who remain patient because profits keep soaring for companies. Stock prices tend to follow the path of corporate earnings over the long term. Now, Palantir Technologies helped lead the way. They surged 29.5%. Yeah, that's after the CEO said its overall revenue leaped 93% in what he called an otherworldly quarter. Well, I think we can all identify with that, because haven't we all felt that? Haven't we all been riding the wake of Palantir Technologies, and we all felt like 93% better in this last quarter alone? Because, you know, what happens to regular people like us, it's always, you know, foreshadowed by what happens in the stock market, the S&P 5 whatever. You know, all that matters, because it has a direct effect on everyday lives and everyday people. Or am I mistaken?
No, it doesn't. Most people actually don't invest in that, so it doesn't really move the needle. Commodities do, because people see that in the marketplace. You know, their essentials like food, like groceries and stuff like that. But, yeah, the reaping the rewards of investing is not really something people have extra income for.
Yeah, you know, I'm beginning to think the whole thing is a big waste of time and a scam and something that we should be not caring about nearly as much as caring about what's happening to us. For instance, you know, I keep hearing about oil prices are going down. Well, why aren't they going down at the gas pump? You know, I don't really care about the price of fuel as much as a lot of people, because I'm more into green energy and things like that. But, okay, you know, if it's going to drop, why doesn't it drop immediately for consumers? And the answer I'm told is, well, it takes time. Okay, but, you know, when this whole a bunch of shenanigans started with Iran, those prices went up immediately. I didn't have to wait for that. That was the next day the prices went up. So someone has to explain to me how, when the prices are going up, that's immediate. And when the prices go back down, I've got to wait a few months. Meanwhile, the prices are bouncing up and down like a yo-yo in the commodities, stock market, S&P, whatever. All those people are benefiting. So it just seems like maybe, you know, somebody's taking advantage of the situation quite a bit.
Sure does, yeah. A lot of people probably asking the same questions. So that's something definitely we'll hear more about, no less, especially if the outlook is continuing on the trajectory that we're seeing. I mean, people are really, really at the effect of this, and it's not impressive, and it's the opposite of what a lot of the promises were. Not that, you know, anyone's kidding themselves about politicians lying, but this is totally, unacceptable to the average voter. Because they really are, they're bearing the brunt of this cost, and it's really, you know, impossible to build a household budget or finance, you know, for the future of your sort of small business and even larger enterprises, they're going to have a tough time, especially with the tariff environment and all the other aspects
of the economy. Yeah, we've forgotten about that. All these things are happening, and people seem so patient. And less things were happening under the last guy, you know, under Biden, but people were a whole lot less patient then. You know, all kinds of demands and anger being expressed. And here it's just like, let's just give it some time. Yeah, I think maybe that's a big mistake. And people should be, you know, this is when you should be angry. When there's new wars going on, absurdities of tariffs, hiking the prices of everything, inflation out of control, and greed and corruption and outright theft.
Yeah, let's just... also point the finger squarely. I mean, I would say the judiciary, but also let's be very clear that the type of legislation and the overall regulatory environment for the market is kind of disappointing. You know, the amount of mergers that are going ahead and the sorts of consolidation we're experiencing specifically in media, but in across the board, with a lot of purchases and acquisitions that then, you know, we realize in many ways have various effects on the consumer. And that is all occurring without really much consequence. I mean, there is aspects of those consumer interests specifically around technology and other kinds of legal issues and constitutional issues. But we are really experiencing a profound transformative environment that is not really being held to as much scrutiny as you would expect. Same thing with medical research, science in general. It's been really kind of stripped of guardrails, stripped of a lot of resources, and people are pushing through these sorts of smash and grab type initiatives, and I don't know. It things will come to bear. I think people will demand that this is not right. It's untenable. You cannot allow this to occur when you have real, concrete, measurable impacts on consumers.
Yeah,
general.
I want to believe that. I really do. I'm just, you know, we keep saying that. We keep saying that's going to happen. When does it happen? When do people wake up and say, enough already? We talked about Albania last week, where, you know, the government is falling over there because of something that Donald Trump's son-in-law did. You know, people there care, and they're passionate, and people here... Are we afraid? Are we? Do we really think that criticizing or getting upset is going to come back to haunt us? Because we didn't seem to think that before, you know. It's just very disappointing to see the lack of passion that really needs to be addressed here. Here's another story, and Kyle, I was hoping to get your feelings on this. We saw a piece a couple of weeks ago on the huge gas station known as Bucky's on the John Oliver show. Texas-based travel center. In fact, a lot of people who came over to this country for the World Cup were enamored by this obscenely huge chain store of gas stations. They basically have a dark side to them because they sue everybody who has either a name or an image that is in any way similar. You know, if you have some kind of animated cartoon character, Bucky's is going to sue you for confusing people. Yeah. So basically, they opened their first store in Ohio, in Beaver Creek earlier this year. And then they filed a lawsuit against a company called Minimart because they have a cartoon beaver mascot and they claim it's too similar to its own with its wide eyes and a smile that also uses red as a predominant color. I am not kidding. That is grounds for a lawsuit in this country. Beaver's Minimart customers say they have been shopping there for decades, while Bucky's has existed in the Buckeye State only since April Yeah. Now this is really fascinating. Reading into it more that Buc-ee's has gone after other companies over this, it just put a bad taste in my mouth because they just seem like such a fun company, according to resident Sam Bryan. To see this, that they're coming after a small business like this, it upset me like it did a lot of Beaver Creek residents. The community is looking to support Beaver's Mini Mart financially. A local Facebook group is organizing an all-day cash mob, whatever that is, on Friday, August 7th, encouraging people to come in and spend $20 to support the Beaver Creek business. Wow, it's just, we are lawsuit happy in this country. Last week tonight's host John Oliver took aim at Buc-ee's and its lawsuits during a segment, egging the company on to sue him. He explained that Buc-ee's had won many of the more than a dozen lawsuits it has brought against businesses, mainly over their animal-based logos. Last year, Buc-ee's sued a Florida store and a South Carolina apparel company over alleged copyright infringement. And a Missouri business settled while another shuttered after Buc-ee's accused both of trademark infringement. Oklahoma underwear and apparel company also vowed to fight back against a lawsuit brought by Buc-ee's, with owner Jarrett Hewitt telling Nextstar's KFOR in November that it's time that somebody stands up and says this isn't right. John Oliver seemingly agreed, saying his show has the will to get into a fight with Buc-ee's, and to poke the beaver further, he showcased merchandise featuring a cartoon version of Mr. Nutterbutter, who has appeared on his show several times with the slogan, hang on, I'm having some technical issues here. Okay, sorry about that. Feature a cartoon version of Mr. Nutterbutter, who has appeared on his show several times with the slogan, buck off in a very Buc-ee style. It's insane. It's crazy. I can't talk about it anymore because it just gets me too upset. But that is our country right now. That's what's happening.
Oh yeah, the absurdity of sort of overreach on creativity is a big deal, and you can't let it overtake the kinds of norms that we expect, especially when it comes to people trying to create an identity or start a business. There's just too much power being given to larger entities in some of these regards.
So let's talk about something else. Our wildflowers are coming out. That's nice.
There's some different color, and I was impressed with how the native species did.
Yeah, they're blooming. I don't know what kind of flowers they are, but we bought a couple of bags just of random seeds and planted them. I think it was in March. And they just started coming up almost immediately. And the ones in the sun, they're already blooming. So, you know, well, it's August, so I guess, you know, it took a little bit of time. But
if we'd started earlier, I think it would have been better. It took a while for us to make an area and spend the time out there. And that one area that's shadier didn't do as well. They're sort of all gone now, although there's a bunch of clovers. But I think the shadier area, when the early growth wasn't quite starting, would have been a better time. Like, there was just too much growth in the upper canopy when we actually put the seeds in, so you're getting, like, afternoon light, and I just don't think at that angle it works. Mm-hmm. But the other spot, there's kind of less canopy cover, so it's just, you know, like, the top branches of the trees. So that's better overall, like in mid-afternoon. But that just goes to show you that these things are sensitive. But anyway, the trick would be probably to have started earlier when a lot of things are starting. That way they have more surface area later in the season when there's less light, but mm-hmm. they can absorb maybe enough to cope. But I don't know. I'm not an expert. I just like that they're wild.
Well, I like seeing things come up, different things. Sometimes they're weeds. Sometimes they're things you didn't plant at all. Like black-eyed Susans, I happen to think that's a really attractive plant. And they pop up everywhere, and I've never planted them, but, you know, I like seeing them, and I hope to see more of them. Do you remember we planted bulbs, and they came up in spring, and they're gone. I mean, whatever plant that was, were they tulips? I think they were tulips.
No, daffodils.
Daffodils, okay. I kind of thought there'd be more of them, but they just came up for a month or so in the spring, and I guess they'll see us next year. Kind of feel a little shortchanged on that one.
Yeah, bulbs are like that, but I think they come back. So I thought some of them were later in the season, but
are
I think
so. Maybe some more will come back.
I don't think I'm not as hopeful now. Again, it's a harder spot for us, but we'll see. I think pretty much all of them grew a little bit successively. Like there was some early and then some later, but they look mostly done now.
Yeah. I want to know if anyone else has planted sunchokes, because that is a plant that we experimented with, and it comes back year after year. And once you plant, they're also called Jerusalem artichokes, and they're not from Jerusalem, and they're not artichokes. But once you plant them, you will not be able to get rid of them. You can harvest them too in the wintertime. They're a Native American plant that is quite popular in some circles, but it's impossible to find anywhere. You know, you can't find it in supermarkets. I think I found it once in a supermarket, and it's just kind of cool. It's kind of cool to plant something that's native that will keep coming back, and they bloom too. They have flowers, kind of like sunflowers, but not nearly as big. And they don't always bloom. They bloom sometimes. If you have the best environment for it.
Yeah, I want to actually grow real artichokes, but I think they need like more of a desert, like drier, sunnier climate. So that would be hard. But we've never had the blooms on sunchokes.
We did once. We did once.
Like
a little bit.
Yeah, barely, mm-hmm. but it's something that's fun to, like, watch and learn how to cook. They're not bad. They're good vegetables, like root vegetables.
They are tubers. They give, what is a tuber? I keep hearing that word.
I believe it's a type of bulb.
Uh-huh. Okay. So something you plant and it... well, I'm not an expert. I don't know all these things. A tuber is something that I think is the actual vegetable itself. You plant it, and then things grow from that. And that's kind of how it works. I don't know, but that's what we're doing. I'm sorry, it's like 100 degrees in this room. That's why I'm kind of struggling here, and try to plow through it. Plus, I didn't pick any happy stories this week. I'm sorry. No, wait. No. The reflecting pool case has been dropped. So there's that. Okay. Yeah, and the weird thing is, this is the guy, the ex-Olympian, David Hearn. This is the guy that went up to the reflecting pool in Washington, D.C. and touched it and was subsequently charged with ruining the whole thing. Janine Pirro, who is the... U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, charged him immediately with vandalizing the pool based on things the Trump administration was saying. But surprisingly, she dropped the case on Friday, not only withdrawing the charges against Mr. Hearn, but blasting the Interior Department for the rushed and botched, her word, renovation, along with U.S. Park police officials who fed bad information that led her to publicly cite tremendous evidence against Mr. Hearn. In the process, intentionally or not, she skated perilously close to contradicting Mr. Trump. And he noticed. according to this New York Times article. Now, this is the thing that we keep noticing. You know, people who have authority are so afraid of contradicting Trump because of what he might do. Well, what might he do? I'd like to know that. What kind of a country are we in now?
Yeah, the dumbest aspect of this, like today, she was called to see and visit, you know, have a meeting with him because apparently, you know, like basically the told to go to the principal's office. And the absurdity of that, the assumed fealty that, oh, she's going to go and change her tune because she might lose her position of power, and that over her judgment, expertise, career, you know, integrity, bar association affiliate, you know, credentials. Who knows that she would compromise all of that just to go and keep her neck in a job that, you know, he wants to direct and macromanage the way he sees fit.
Macromanage. I like that.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yes, I guess we do.
It's our word.
Uh-huh. But, you know, I was thinking when this happened, you know, I would have won a lot of respect for her if she apologized to this guy who was put through hell, you know. And how hard is that to do? Obviously, he shouldn't have been charged. And you were at the forefront of that, and you've since learned that you were wrong. And to your credit, you dropped the case. Great. So now just do the simple thing and say, we're sorry you went through that. I'm sorry for my role in it. But I see now she can't do that, because if she does that, she's going directly against Trump. And she's terrified of what will happen to her as a result of that. Again, I ask, what country are we living in? This is not Stalinist Russia where you'll wind up in a camp somewhere, is it? I mean, what are you afraid of? I'm asking a lot of people these days, what are you afraid of? You know, standing up for your beliefs, isn't that what we're told is the right thing to do, you know, from childhood? And I think children don't have a problem with this. I think they continuously stand up for what they believe in. Why can't we do the same thing? I mean, when I say we, the people that I find myself spending time with, they don't really have a problem doing that either. They stand up for what they believe in. They argue, you know, and the thing is, they're not in the public eye like these people are. And whether it's media outlets or technology companies or people in the administration, it seems with the more power you get, the less courage you get. I don't know, Kyle, do you notice the same thing? It's kind of like, it just seems like we assumed the people we were trusting with all this power would say and do the right things, and it seems like that's far from the case.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, it depends on how you look at it and your sort of political worldview. Yeah, we're putting, a lot of people would say, I guess, from whatever political persuasion would argue that, you know, you should never put that much faith or trust in the government or whatever, but there's aspects of the role it plays that are key to, like, consumer safety or environmental stuff or, you know, like, big issues that a company or an individual wouldn't necessarily concern themselves with. And we task our public officials to take on, to undertake that work on our behalf. And when it's bought and corrupted and misguided like this, we end up footing the bill, being at the effect of the damage and the hazards, and then in some just bizarre mindset, keep electing them. But I don't have the answers anymore. Like, my life has been sold out from under me already. I don't want to spend any more time trying to believe in this system. I've talked about, you know, the importance of it. Everything I knew from the 20th century, you know, all the things I grew up, all the lessons learned from the mid-20th century, World War II, like, those were the stories I learned a lot from. And that's not the era that we're in now. And dedicating my life to changing and challenging a system that will never, ever benefit me to the point where I'm just going to disintegrate to dust. Like, I don't want to commit that. I have a certain level of self-preservation I have to do to even be able to wake up physically and have the energy to endure this marketplace, this labor force that I'm tasked with participating in so I can create revenue for our bureaucracy. So, yeah, I'm a little tired. I'm a little bit fatigued of the just naive belief that this will all eventually turn in our favor. Yeah, sure, it will. But the only reason I'm advocating for it is because it's the right thing to do, that we have abject violence otherwise, and that there are generations and neighbors and people with less means and less presence of mind to speak out than I, and I will be in the world with them, and I'd like for them to maybe have someone speak up if they can, because that's just my foolish nature. So there you have it. Please discuss. Please find the answers yourself. You know, ask ChatGPT or something.
Oh, no, don't do that. Keep ChatGPT out of it. That's just not going to help. But, no, I hear you. I hear you. I feel the same frustration. We express it in different ways. But, yeah, we're drained. We are so, it's not just because we're in a hot room. We are so drained dealing with this. And I think everybody can identify. And maybe that's, you know, maybe going along with it is the easiest thing to do. It's the least painful thing to do. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what we should be doing. It's an eye-opener, I'll say that. You know, people have told me things like this for years, that, hey, America, you're not immune from all the crap that happens in the rest of the world. And that's one thing I think we all can say we learned in the last 10 years, right?
Absolutely. I'm standing by my words early on. It's unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a life's work to forgive those who supported this. And to those who discredited our way of government, our plural society, and, you know, the kinds of internal oversight and various entities that are in charge, it will be a world, a lifetime, a universe of energy to refrain from the kind of, I think, deserved consequences that are at play here. And I think that it will be that we get along more or less until we don't, and then maybe back again to getting along for a little while. You know, we've seen many examples of that in other countries with civil unrest and disputes and blood feuds over, you know, eons.
Mm-hmm.
I think of my own very small support network, and I, even in some of the more contentious moments with family, I think to myself and sort of laugh that it is not a foregone conclusion that families get along. And if we're talking about the overall populace of our country, I think that stands and scales almost precisely if we're a large family. It's not a foregone conclusion that we get along. In fact, not getting along and finding common ground and common cause in our differences is the very nature of what we're to be about. So I think to myself, and I have some faith that, yeah, you know, you can have family that you don't necessarily need to get along with, but, you know, we all have boundaries and breaking points, and I think you can still be neighbors with people that you will truly find have acted in unforgivable ways.
I hear that, like, a lot, and, you know, I think there's a distinct difference between those people who really don't think things through and who listen to what they're told and make bad decisions and don't realize the consequences of those bad decisions, and those people who are truly evil and know exactly what they're doing. I'm thinking of people like Steve Miller, the personification of Satan, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's not even that.
Those people I can never forgive. People who don't know any better or just make bad decisions, and there are plenty of people who agree with me who make bad decisions too. I get how you can get it wrong, but at least own up to it. At least, you know, say, okay, yeah, don't ask me next time then, because I'm not going to know the right thing, and I'm too easily persuaded by those people who do know what they're doing.
Yeah. Political, like, apparatchiks, or, you know, the sort of, I guess, what was referred to as deep state, but people that are craving and seeking only to control and gain power and initiate that sort of nationalism or scapegoat the other and foment a sort of xenophobic and anti-immigrant sentiment. Yeah, sure. We know their intentions. It is a particular flavor of you know, American fascism and abject racism, deep-seated resentment for the strides that were made last century, right, in this country, and the things that became norms that people just could not cope with, could not really understand and accept. So, yeah, I agree. They're definitely at fault and will, you know, find their own way to consequence or some form of reconciliation. And also, pardon me, I think the media itself making a lot of money off of this, but I think pardon me for disagreeing with party politics and this sort of attitude that, or like, excuse me from your lecture, I guess, is what I'm saying, in the future about educated voters, that we aren't in tune, that we don't need to listen to the lowest common denominator. And I mean lowest. I'm sorry. Your grievances, I get it. We listen. We understand. And as a workforce, we're in a lot of this together, the same boat, but we need equal amounts of listening, and we will no longer, I swear, no longer acquiesce to the gentleman at the end of the bar grumbling about something he has no idea about.
I don't know
about.
If the bar is the best place to have these
exactly,
kinds of conversations.
Exactly, but to have party operators try to convince educated voters that we need to appeal our messaging and our platform to people that have insane grievances and wildly opposed and just bonkers opinions about things. That is not correct. And we cannot just sit around and as a country decide that we're going to take the people. It used to be that we needed more information. Now we have more information, and we're in a sort of virtual era where we don't even understand reality. And I think that's the thing that we need to have and understand in politics, is that this stuff matters.
It's funny how you were talking about these people that, you know, that you can't really communicate with because they're so out there, they're so filled with conspiracies and their own petty grievances and things like that. But what's crazy now is that many of those people are running things. And those people are in government. And that's where we've gone. And look what we have now. We have explosive diarrhea because we have nobody in the CDC that can handle it. We have all kinds of climate issues that were predicted. We have Anthony Fauci being torn apart in front of a bunch of ravenous senators, being blamed for COVID, being blamed for not doing enough for COVID, being blamed for virtually anything. And basically, they want to send this 85-year-old to prison for some reason. It's just insane. The craziness that is the norm these days. You know, we're watching this documentary on the last days of Nixon, and you see when something is revealed, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to find out that, hey, this person actually said this happened and not what the president said happened. It didn't go away. It didn't disappear after the 24-hour news cycle. Here, these things can happen again and just be ignored. That is the level of corruption that we live in now. You know, it's a different time, a different set of values. Now, we're talking about elections, democracy, that kind of thing. Today is the Michigan primary. Democrats are freaking out, or at least some Democrats are freaking out about this. And I think it's a big mistake, especially to take the bait that a lot of Republicans and so-called mainstream Democrats seem to want to fixate on. But, yeah, you have people who are more progressive. You have people who call themselves socialists. You have people who basically have completely different viewpoints and philosophies on how to deal with things. But they are all very, very different from what Republicans want to do. Now, Republicans are getting the Democrats to panic by saying, you're electing communists. First of all, I don't know anybody who's saying that they are, you know, running for the Communist Party. But you know what? Even if they were, that's not abnormal in Europe. There are many people in communist parties that are part of government. They're not running the entire country, but they are part of it. They'll listen to. And so what? If you have somebody that wins a seat someplace, you listen to them. And if they don't make any sense, you don't do what they want to do. And you move on from there. We have a socialist mayor in New York City right now. I happen to think he's the best mayor we've had in a long, long time. Prove me wrong, but he gets along with people. He has a sense of humor, and he's getting things done. Maybe it won't work out, but right now it seems to be working out. Why is that something to be afraid of? Try something different. If it doesn't work, you stop doing it. But if you start pointing fingers at each other and panicking because you might elect those kind of people, boy, you're just handing it back to the Republicans when you have this thing in the bag. So I really, really hope that Democrats wise up and stop panicking about every little thing.
Yeah, my attitude is like, yeah, I'm basically a blue, as you could imagine, you know, ride or die, just Democrat straight up, you know, affiliated, all that. And am I totally sold on the DSA? And I think it's the, you know, the best thing and the future and everything. No. No, not really. But am I willing to listen? Am I going to give it a chance? Do I have some things I've observed? Yeah, some of the policies are things are further than I would imagine, but they're imagining things.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of it is they have a ground game.
Yeah.
They're organized.
Yeah.
They're doing things. They're reaching a huge swath of voters that aren't going to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to listen to you. They're not going to listen to other generations, other voices. In that sort of traditional blue, capital D Democrat field, because they're not organized. They don't have a strong message, something that reaches people that haven't been, you know, traditionally attuned to party politics. So as a voter, like, do I hate it? No. Am I in, like, lockstep agreement with it? No, I don't even know yet myself. I'm willing to entertain it. And is it, if it's on the front line, if there are people that are on the street listening to people, interacting with them, and they're coming to other parts of the Democratic side of that large tent or whatever, and motivating and getting the brunt, the lion's share, the middle of the road Democrats to actually adopt some of this stuff because of that groundwork, I'm not mad at that. I think that's a good strategy.
Right, right.
You need to have momentum and invigorate the voting populace, invigorate that base around whatever they're saying to you.
And disagree, you know, have debates. Don't disqualify them because you don't agree.
Oh, totally. Refine it. Why, like, just swear people off over, like, what I would say is like, you know, middle school cliques or some kind of like social, purity thing. That's not something we have time for. We're in the
Absolutely not, political
moment for that. And I just think that you can still have, innovative and active parts of a political branch that you can find common cause with and and handle the kind of corruption, handle the kind of blocks you need in Congress, and see your way to a better future, and, you know, let it sort itself out. You know, maybe there's aspects that don't stick with that side permanently. Maybe they go off and, you know, find a third party, or maybe it becomes something that side represents. But it's not going to do much good for anybody to not form those alliances and get it, you know, adopt the things that are good and really form that kind of tidal wave of support.
You know, one thing that really gets me, though, in this discussion is when they point to quotes that are simply unacceptable. And one that keeps coming up a lot is the one where a candidate is saying they want to abolish the police. And in at least one case, I have found that what they actually said was they want to abolish the police state, which I would imagine we all would want to abolish, you know, especially if police are acting like they are in a dictatorship. We've seen many instances of that. But if somebody is saying they want to abolish the police, first of all, I have yet to see anyone actually make a serious attempt at that. Mamdani is being accused of doing. He certainly is not abolishing the police. There's no question about that. It's not something that you can do. You can improve the police. You can criticize the police. You can do all kinds of other things. But mostly, look at the crazy quotes from the other side. Look at the things people are saying and getting away with there. And ask yourself, are the crazy quotes that I'm being concerned with right now for these other candidates, do they compare in any way to all the nuttiness that we hear concerning American history, concerning science, concerning the arts, all kinds of things that basically are closing the doors on so much that is a part of civilization? And that's a reality. That's what's happening right now. So you might get somebody that says the wrong thing or says something badly or even says something that you find offensive. But ask yourself, is the whole picture worse than what is going on right now? I think you'll have a hard time with that.
Yeah, I mean, the abolish the police state thing, I think, is parallel and in the same spirit as people that think policing is out of control. Crime is down, and really the two real problems are gun violence and the types of policing that is, you know, including surveillance and a lot of the other tactics, but the federal policing that's going on, the kinds of use of systems and automation and stuff is itself a part of that. It's not just the statistics and the numbers on the street, but there, I mean, I think one of the numbers I read is that, like, if you are shot at all in America right now, a third of the time it's from a police officer.
Wow.
I don't know if that's exactly right. I think that's the statistic is something like that.
Let's check into that.
But it is out of control. Gun violence is out of control.
Uh-huh.
And policing itself is, yeah, it serves a purpose, but overall it's working. They are doing a good job, and they have been the qualified immunity thing out of control.
Mm-hmm.
There need to be consequences for bad cops.
Yeah.
You can't just reassign. That is a part of abolishing a police state that is out of control. And I hear that as a subtext. I don't hear it as some wild thing that people are really pulling out of nowhere. No, that is grounded in real serious critiques, analysis of the actual product we get from policing. And I think these, like, cop city movements, the kinds of tactics with you know, going after people that are critical of the corrective state, these prison industrial complexes, it's all related.
Yeah.
And it is now it's overrun with politics and lobbying, and we are being basically stripped of our rights and our voice, and it's extended into the media and everywhere else.
When you hear somebody say something that you consider objectionable, instead of condemning them, find out more. Listen, ask, what do you mean by that? And ask yourself, what is my argument against that? And ask yourself, do we need every prison? Do we need as many cops? Do we need cops to be militarized? there's all kinds of nuance here. And if we just simply probe a little deeper, we'll have a good discussion. We'll get people who are qualified, and we'll get rid of the cancer that is currently in charge. And that's something that, you know, and when you have, when you insert ICE into the equation, well, if you're considering them police, then by all means abolish the police, because they are not qualified, they are not vetted, they are killing people, they are intimidating everyone, they are arresting the wrong people, and they are breaking up families. We didn't get into this, but there are cases in New York City where they're swarming the streets spraying toxic chemicals into people's faces and things like that. You know, it's time to fight back. It really is. And this comes back to the beginning of the show, where people just aren't reacting enough. And I hope that that changes, because the only way you get change is through some kind of reaction, some kind of anger. 30 seconds, Kyle.
Yeah, it's all about the example that is set. And many times the politicians, the activists, journalists, populists, people, your neighbors, friends, you have a lot more influence. But be careful. Be careful with your words and really mean it.
All right, we're going to have to say goodnight. OTW at 2600.com, and we will see you again next week. Good night.
Call out, would you touch me? Hey. You know, my opinion, I always tell people, is irrelevant. People, we need to stop trusting the experts, right? Trusting the experts is not a feature of science. It's not a feature of democracy. It's a feature of religion, and it's a feature of totalitarianism.